So we were the first podcast. That's not true. We it's a comedy advice show.
But it's not giving advice to comedians.
We've had to make that distinction for a few times.
We've had to clear that up.
We would never. You would find few less qualified people than ourselves. My name is Justin McElroy, and I'm the oldest brother of my brother, and me.
I'm Travis McElroy. I'm the middlest brother of my brother, and me.
And I'm Griffin McElroy. I'm the sweet baby brother of my brother, and me.
Welcome to the CISO-C Show. I'm Andrew Steven. My Brother, and Me is a successful podcast that recently was turned into a TV show.
What's the cursing situation on this podcast?
Feel free to say whatever you want to say.
Like a shitty Dear Abby.
Yeah.
Like, what if Dear Abby was really shitty?
And we're not trying to, like, the joke isn't like we're giving you opposite advice. It's just like we're not qualified to give it. We don't know.
It's like a loose theoretical justification, honestly. There's not much advice these days.
When we started doing it, we didn't want to just be another podcast of, like, three white dudes talking about stuff. And so it's like, what is the smallest amount of artifice that we can add on to that? And I think that's probably where the advice came from.
So instead, we chose to go with three white guys telling people how to be better.
Yeah, which is way better.
We also realized that it would be a format that would require very little preparation because it's just from our own life experience. So there's not much work we can put into it.
So, I mean, is it cliche to say, have you given advice to people about how to start a podcast?
I get asked that all the time, where people are like, so how do I start a podcast? And we get that question sometimes. We never answer it because the answer is like, there is no, like, direct, okay, have two brothers and each live in a different city and have it be 2010. And then, like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, the technical aspect's easy. When we started doing it, I don't know what Justin was up to. Travis and I were using microphones from the video game Rock Band. I had a few of those because, you know, I liked the harmonies. And so Travis and I used those. And Justin, do you even remember what you were recording on?
Like a headset microphone.
It was a headset microphone, like a gaming
like
headset.
Like a gaming headset that I would use to, like, play Warcraft.
So like, the technical aspect's easy. But, yeah, we get asked that all the time. And just, like, I'm glad that we have this advice thing as, like, silly and as, like, little as we commit to it as we do, just because, like, you gotta have something that's just not just like, I think people are really gonna like my twisted, skewed views of the world. So here's just a podcast where I sit down and just, like, barf them all out. Because probably not. You should probably have a little bit more to it than that.
I think the only advice I think I would ever give someone creatively as far as starting a podcast is, like, if you have a friend or a relative, or if you know someone that every time the two of you or three of you or four of you get together, you always end up talking about blank.
Yeah.
Just put a microphone in front of you. Like, if you always end up talking about 80s cartoons, then just record that, and maybe people will like it, maybe they won't, but it was a conversation you were going to have anyways, so you might as well record it and put it out.
Travis touched on
that's
that.
That's a perverse way of looking at human interaction.
But, right? I'm not wrong. Like, that's
no, you are. No, that's implied by my saying it's perverse.
Okay, fair enough.
I would also say don't start doing a podcast with the aspiration that it will be a big smash success within the first 10 episodes or 100 episodes or 200 episodes, because then, like, make it because it's fun and you enjoy doing it, and that will shine through. But, like, there's a lot of self-promotion in this game that we get from, like, a lot of folks, and it's like, that's a really hard sell. You don't know who I am. You don't know who this other person is. We're going to sit here and talk about blank for a while. Give me an hour of your life. And it's like, that's a lot to ask for from thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of people. So just, like, make something you like making that you have fun making, and then wait for it to... none of us thought this was going to be really much of anything, I don't think, when we started doing it.
But no, we just started because we wanted to talk to each other.
Yeah.
Oh, God. It really, honestly, like, was such a long... It was like 18 months of us, like, trying, and then, no, that doesn't make sense. And it's really like we had to build a format that would work with people who aren't actors, who don't really, I mean, at least not on, in a way that you could put on TV.
Not good actors.
Not good actors.
Not good.
I mean,
and who don't really do jokes.
Yeah.
Like, we don't know how to write jokes. That's another big, like, so we had to come up with a format, and, like, we didn't, we had to work with people who knew a lot better than us, but, like.
The trickier problem, because it is sort of an untread ground for the most part. Like, there are podcasts that are making TV shows that are really good. But, like, the question for, I think, us wasn't, like, how do we turn a podcast into a TV show? Although that is a good question. It was, how do we turn our podcast into a TV show?
Yeah.
Because, like, we said so much shit while we were, like, developing it and figuring it out that made us sound like so far up our own ass, but I really think it's true that it's not like any other TV show. Like, it couldn't be and be my brother and me. Like, it couldn't be some scripted thing with, like, a bunch of artifice hanging off of it. It couldn't be a prank show. It couldn't be any of that stuff and still be, like, an accurate representation of the podcast that we make. And so, like, we had to kind of figure out how to make this thing that really wasn't like anything. And I'm not saying that, that sounds horrible.
Unlike any other TV,
right? Like, it sounds so horrible, but it. I really think it's true in that. And I'm not saying it's everybody's doing it wrong and we're doing it right. I'm saying, like,
we can't do other TV shows that already exist.
The people that we got, lots of companies that came to us before CISO, before Embassy Row, the production company that we worked with, that wanted to do our show like other shows, and they were bad. Like, they were bad ideas, like a prank show or a scripted drama. And it's like, the scripted drama is probably scripted comedy, but, like, those are bad.
We're three doctors.
Now, if somebody had come to us and pitched a scripted drama, I probably would have said yes. Like, but, all right, let's see. There's your money.
There's also the additional problem of, like, you know, it seems like it would not be that hard because it's like, well, you guys already sit down and you record a thing and now it's just video. But it proved very difficult to be like, okay, but how does it train? It's like if you were like, turn this boat into a car, it seems like they're both, you know, methods of conveyance. But like when you really start doing it, you're like, well, we had to change a lot more but while still trying to keep it a boat.
Yeah.
You know, like that's the thing is like we still wanted to feel like our show, but like, we didn't want to just sit there. I mean, right now, we record the podcast in three different rooms in three different states.
Yeah.
And so it's like, you can't just film that. That would be the least interesting with us just like looking off in the distance as we talk into a microphone because we can't even see each other.
Getting up and using the bathroom and hoping the other two just like keep talking and joking long enough that nobody notices.
Yeah. I think that as soon as we started like really talking about it, like sitting down with NBC Row and CISO, like, I think that was like the second thing we said was like, the three of us have to be in it. One, and two, it needs to be in Huntington.
The two big things were figuring out it had to be in Huntington. But because before that, it was like, God, so long ago were we talking about this stuff where it was like, what if like the Justin and Travis came to Austin and we filmed some of it there and then we did a live show in New York and that could be an episode and then we'd go to Cincinnati to check in. Like it was all over the place. And as soon as it was just like, no, it's going to be in Huntington and that's going to be the show. That was the first thing. And the other thing was like just figuring out the format, which JD, our director was like, instrumental in helping us like figure out like exactly, okay, we know where it's going to be. We know we want it to be like the podcast. How do we do it like that?
And then also we wanted it to feel, there's lots of things that are shot in LA. There's fewer, but still some shows shot in Austin, stuff shot in New York. We really wanted it to feel unique. Like we wanted it to feel different, like, and show a part of the country that doesn't get filmed a lot.
And also, I mean, really, and Justin, if I start to get schmaltzy, you'll yell at me, right?
Yeah.
I think one of the reasons people like My Brother, Me, the podcast and our show is like, we really have a history together and we really grew, like we didn't meet in college. We've known each other since birth. And so like we talk about our hometown on the show a lot. We talk about our dad on the show a lot. And our dad does a podcast so that we talk about our families a lot. And so it is very much like a homegrown kind of feeling to the show that I think if we set anywhere else, then it would end up being a show about like how much we don't fit in this other place.
Yeah.
Like
if
we shot a show in New York, it would be the weirdest juxtaposition of us being extremely uncomfortable.
Now we've
it.
Positioned it so that if we do a season two and we did an episode in New York, it would be the most batshit crazy thing ever. Straight up Home Alone 2 style. Like, what are we doing here? Let's go to FAO Schwartz. It closed down a decade ago.
An idea. What if you, for season two, it's just a shot for shot remake of Home Alone 2?
Dude,
That would be amazing. Okay,
we've talked about some pretty conceptual shit, even for season one that didn't make the cut, that if we did a season two, we've got so many bangers.
I can barely survive in New York, like, as a human.
Yeah.
Now try it, like, we're filming you do it.
Yeah. And hey, also, hold up a busy New York street.
Right, exactly.
No, I don't want to do that.
I'd rather not do that.
Go talk to people on the street. No.
No, I don't want to
do that. I will not. I was scared enough to do that.
We actually, at one point, discussed having a, like, basically a fourth stand-in brother who would be the one that did things.
The things that like, you the things didn't that
we
do.
Talked about. And then we'd bring him in, like a stunt brother, basically.
What were some other of the, when you were trying to, adapt the podcast to a show, what were maybe some other ideas that you guys bounce around that didn't work out?
I mean, Superdesk is the one that came to mind.
Yeah.
That was basically,
we had the
bigger element of Superdesk. So Superdesk was going to be that we had this big desk that the three of us sat behind, which we do on the show. But then anytime we went out on location, we would bring Superdesk with us and we would set it up again. I know it's not funny. That's Superdesk, why I didn't get it.
Superdesk isn't funny unless you set up that the show is going to be structured like a late night show. But the joke of Superdesk was that none of us, we all wanted to be the host. So it'd be like three Johnny Carson desks next to each other, each with our own fanciful
like
cup of pencils.
And
yeah,
head.
Exactly. It's still not funny, actually. Not I do want to say. I do want to cut that
one. I was laughing quietly.
It's one of those where it's like, oh, that's funny for a second.
It was it was honestly a self-preservation maneuver. Like, we wanted to have some sort of gimmick that could, like, ground us and protect. I think it was, like, symbolic. Like, yeah. We needed something to hide behind.
There was a lot of deliberation about whether there should be a live audience in the sections where we shot in the studio, like a lot, like, and we all had a lot of opinions about it. I was always pretty not for it because I thought it would be pretty weird, and I don't remember who was.
I was for it.
Travis was for it. Travis thought it was. I mean, Travis is very wrong, and obviously you know that now.
I liked the energy it would provide, and a lot of that would be frantic, panicked energy because we'd be like in front of people, like trying to do a thing we didn't know how to do already. But like, I liked the idea of like the crowd.
I think that what you lose with the live audience, and we would have actually, I think,
it's the ability to retake something.
Yeah, well that's yes. That's true. But also we lose it in our live shows a little bit, and I'm not complaining, it's just a different energy. But like, sometimes I think it's really funny to fail bad. Sometimes I get personal pleasure out of just like, I know this is gonna whiff, and I'm just gonna whiff.
Put it up there. Yeah,
I'm just
gonna
put it up there, and I know it's gonna tank. Mainly because that's funny to me, but also because my brothers then can come in underneath that and either like carry it to a place where it's decent or knock me to the ground. Either way, that's like entertaining to me. I don't have the guts to do that in front of, like, I cannot intentionally.
It's vulnerable.
Bomb.
I mean, it was interesting what you said earlier about like you guys have a history, and so like I didn't even think of that, but that brings listeners and now viewers in. But I think similarly that it's a way to have vulnerability without, you know, like getting naked on stage or something.
Well,
and
not only that, but now in retrospect, having filmed the show, doing a live audience in the studio would have been atrocious, because the thing that I didn't anticipate, and that gives me, God, so much respect for people who do this like all the time and like on shows that aren't theirs that they didn't create. He's like, there's a lot of like, and this is kind of dorky, but a feeling of vulnerability. Like, you know, when we were nearing the end of the process, and it was a very exhausting process making the show, there were times where JD would just like look at us and be like, are you guys okay? And we'd be like, we're really tired. We're very tired. And he'd be like, okay, well, do you want to take a break? And it was very much like, yeah, because like I didn't have anything in that. Like, you, like they'd be like, hey, can we do a fourth take of that? And I'm like, please don't do this.
We basically have built lives for ourselves where we don't work. And then someone made us work for like 3 weeks.
The first day of shooting, when really the first shot, when we did the very first cold open, the very first punch in to the introduction, and we finished it. And I think all three of us had this simultaneous thought in our heads, which was like, all right, what's next? And JD was like, no, we're going to do that again, and you're going to try and be funnier this time. And we were like, wait, hold on, wait, we weren't perfect, huh? It was, yeah. It's good that we didn't have a live audience. Also, Travis did a hit on Justin. If there had been a live audience there, we would have had to fill out a whole police report. And
you know what? No joke, like that, there were some very, very real moments that happened in the show that I think if there had been an audience there, they would have had this air of fakeness to them because we'd be performing.
Actually, I'm sorry. I'm thinking about it now. If you had struck Justin out of fear in front of a live audience, the reaction to that I may have been able to coast onto that. Like, I would surf on that wave until my death at 130 years old because it would sustain me so fully.
Travis hit me.
I did, but it was very real.
It's on the show.
It was very justified. See it.
There's still an air of tension between you.
It's very called for.
This is really fun.
Yeah, it was good stuff.
Now, on the flip side, is there anything that you learned while making the show that you've brought to the podcast?
That's a very good question.
That's interesting.
That's why I'm here.
You know what? I will say
I'm
this.
I'm going to go to the bathroom.
Oh. I will say this. I don't know if it's necessarily had... a real concrete application of the show, but I was convinced going into shooting it that I didn't know how, when we shot with other people, if they were going to quote unquote get it, you know what I mean? Like, you think, I did think of our thing as being very specific, of a certain taste. There's certain people who are going to think this is funny and other people are just going to be like, what? And then when we started shooting with other people in the scenes and they got it, it made me realize it's just sort of us being goofy. It's not really that abstract or high concept or anything. You know, my special blend of humor is not so erudite that it's going to leave them in the dust. No, it's just kind of regular jokes. And I think that awareness has brought a certain level of confidence to the rest of the podcast. Seeing people who don't already enjoy us be able to play along and stuff, I think was very reassuring.
There's also a weird air of concreteness that has followed me after the show, because we've been in the post-production process now following the show, so we'll get edits and clips and stuff and we'll see it. And you know, we record the podcast and that is definitely a thing, and we've been doing it for going on 7 years now, but there's something about somebody invested money in this and made a thing and people are excited about that thing that suddenly makes it feel very real. After 7 years, it feels and now we've started doing something with it. Mm-hmm. And it's been a very interesting feeling of seeing people get amped up over this thing.
I don't necessarily think we've changed the way that we've made the podcast or introduced any bits or anything like that from the TV show into the podcast, as much as I take the podcast a lot more seriously now, because we had done it for 6 years before we made the TV show, and that's a long time to do something every single week. And I don't think I was taking the podcast for granted, but I definitely took how easy it was to make it for granted. And now I don't complain so much anymore when I have to wake up at 8 or whatever to record an episode that takes me 1 hour and then it's finished and then we put it out there. I have a broader understanding of what it means to make different types of content now. And it really makes me appreciate what we can do with podcasts.
I think I understand the stuff that works about us three a little bit better too, because I don't listen to episodes after, I'll listen, if there's funny bits or whatever, sometimes people will clip those out and I'll listen to those, but I don't listen to episodes afterwards. I gotta make another one in a week, whatever. And this show has been very different in that, we've watched it over and over and over and over again. And you really, I think once you start to analyze it at that level, start to understand things a little bit more concretely than I did before.
Well, it's also other people are invested in it now too. We've had, a team of editors and, JD and Missy Rowe and CISO and these other people that have also been working on this thing, and they also like it and they also have worked. So they are now a part of it. So it went from three people working on the thing to 23 people working on the thing. It's okay. Our whole thing, web got very big.
And that kept hitting us in waves during production. We had whenever I would look at our audio engineer, who was a guy named Steve-O, and he had his cans on, taught me that. Thank you, Steve-O. I'd just be like, that dude's getting a direct feed of every, like, we've been going at this for 9 hours today, and he's been jacking that straight into his brain, fucking Johnny Mnemonic style, and that's his job. He's getting paid to do that, and he's going to do it probably more when he goes home to, like, get it sounding crisp. I don't know. I'm Steve. I guess I didn't exactly nail down what you do. but, like,
I had a moment like that where we, as part of a bit that did not make it to air, were all three eating Ring Pops. And just like...
It's on the blooper reel, and it is good shit, dude.
It's just destroying three Ring Pops. And we all had this moment collectively where we looked at Steve-O, and his head was just in his hands, like, repelled. Utterly repelled on
we
the worst
day. We tried to get Steve-O on the show a few times. Yeah. I don't know if anyone's going to make it, but
well, he's probably going to enjoy the fact that we're recording this in a... poorly insulated room
in a cathedral
with computer servers running right next to
absolutely a mic. And the weirdest part of shooting this TV show was that after we would do a bit, we would have to get room noise. Yeah. And we didn't know this process. So in case anyone listening does not understand this, you record just the sound of the room so you can isolate it in the final track, right?
And to remove it.
Yes. So you know what just the room sounds like, so you can equalize that tone.
Which I do that for my brother and me, but it's I get the room noise from like a microsecond silence between
we had
words.
Like 30 seconds of room noise, and it was the oddest thing of like doing this dumb stuff in like the mayor's office or whatever.
With the mayor there.
And then for 30 seconds, we just had to dead-eye the mayor.
Mr. Mayor, please
you want like, soak in the
because that's important. You want the people in the room, too, because they interfere with how the sound
it's
is.
It's just like, Mr. Mayor, hi, I'm Griffin. Pee-pee, poo-poo, I'm a baby. Please be silent for 30 seconds and look at each other.
And just think about it.
Just think about what you've done.
But they were also, like, doing it with a crew was really weird because, like, there was one moment we were in the car. We're in the van and we're like making calls and we were trying to call societies to get them to like come on the show. And was it Alex that was in the car?
Yeah.
Alex was like our camera dude in the car and he was like shaking, laughing as like the DP was like slapping his arm.
That was a hard lesson is that the crew will not laugh at everything that you do. And
oh, yeah.
That was tough because the only live podcasting performing experience we had was live shows. And so to do this in front of like a room of like probably about 20 people of like, camera operators and audio engineers and EPs and just like everybody in the room and doing our goofs and just dead silence. You never knew like if you were doing a good job or not.
That was like day one. I think that with the first cold open we did, we finished and JD was like, okay, cut. Okay, so and it was just like nobody was reacting. Like
was literally one of the most terrifying moments of my professional life. Is like we finished that first scene and nobody
like these
laughed.
People all flew here and they're gonna live here for 3 weeks.
I was expecting JD to call a break so he could call Embassy Row. Like, is it too late to cancel?
This is not working.
Right? The way that we shot it, how much time we all spent together all the time. By the end of it, like Griffin, you were behind me driving here. Like the last night after we finished, like after we wrapped shooting, we all like hung out and just like ate sandwiches together back in the HQ and watched YouTube videos together. It was the weirdest, but like there were these people that we were spending 10 to 12 hours a day with 5 to 6 days a week. Yeah. And it was like, okay, we got very close with them and they're very, you know, I don't know why I just turned around. Like I was afraid they were
behind me. You were looking for your point.
Well, they're just all very nice. But it was weird to like suddenly add.
Thanks for the mention, Travis. It was fun working with you too.
But we add these different voices in. And I mean like editing, you know, we did 20 hours of footage filmed for each episode and then each episode was about 25 minutes long. So like the editing was this whole other process of like we get these episodes back and be like, man, they made this really funny. They did a really good job editing the stupid things we said out and just leaving the good stuff in.
What compounded the fact that we were 100% sure that nobody liked our show in the room that had just gave up 3 weeks of their life to come help make this bad show that they hated was that we don't know anything about producing a TV show. We don't know jack shit. And so like everything that happened was the first time that we had done that. And so we learned like this is not a joke. What the little fucking clapper board does, like why it does and why it has the things on it that it has and why that's that way.
We were children. Like they would do something and be like, and why did you do that? Why did we need to move? What are we doing?
Who's this man?
Where does that go?
I was always worried people would think I was challenging them. It's like, so why did you stop it there? And it's like, no.
I was worried they were going to think we were fucking idiots. That, like, didn't
they wouldn't have been wrong.
I get like I was I'm saying I was nervous because I that first day, like, oh man, they're just not going to laugh at anything we do. And also, I'm going to come up to them and be like, I have to make a poopy. Where do I put it? Can we stop the TV show? I got to make a bathroom. It's a departure.
Do you have any favorite memories from creating the show?
Yeah, dude, so, like, a lot of amazing stuff happened.
There's a, and this isn't a bit from the show. This is just, so in the intro of the show, this was footage from the intro. There's a amusement park in our hometown called Camden Park that, like, was the thing that, like, you went to in fifth grade for a school trip. And it was like,
your grades were good.
It's where you went. And it was, like, very exciting for us. And we shot a bunch of footage for, like, the intro there. And there was, like, the weirdest waves of both nostalgia and also, like, I was here when I was 8,
that was the
and now
whole,
I'm here when I'm 33.
That was the whole 3 weeks. We threw a parade for spiders on the main street, 4th Avenue, in Huntington. I used to have a job on 4th Avenue, and there were people coming out of their jobs on 4th Avenue to watch us throw a parade in the street of the town that Justin has